Military and Veterans Affairs Committee to order. It is 1:05 p.m. Tuesday, April 30th. Present are Representative Thompson, Representative Tarr, my Vice Chair, Representative Tuck, and myself, Chair Ledoux. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business today, and I'd like to begin by asking everybody to silence your electronic devices. Before we begin, I would like to introduce our committee aide, Deneen Tuck, and also to thank Julia Bushman with House Records and Taylor Kelly, who is moderating the meeting. And so we have two items of business today. The first is H.R. 6, National Native American Veterans Memorial. This is our second hearing. Amendments were due in our office no later than Monday, April 29th at noon. No amendments were received. Do we have anyone here from Representative Lincoln's office? Elizabeth Ferguson, I believe, is here. And I believe that Representative Lincoln, he's out ill, so he won't be with us today. So do we have any further questions from the committee? Do we have any comments or discussion from the committee? Then Representative Tuck, can I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move H.R. 6, National Native American Veterans Memorial Resolution version 31-LS0669/A from committee with individual recommendation and attached fiscal note.
Okay. Hearing no objections, version 39-LSO669 moves from committee. We will have a brief at ease to sign the bill folder. Back on record again, the next item on the agenda is HB 129, Disabled Alaskans Fish and Game Licenses, DNR Permits. This is our first hearing for HB 129. It is my understanding that we have Alpheus Bullard from Legislative Legal online to answer questions, and it looks like we also have Eddie Grasser from Fish and Game. Since this is my bill, I am going to pass the gavel over to Representative Tuck and go and take a seat at the table.
Okay, as we get set up, this is the first hearing for House Bill 129. It's my understanding that we have Alpheus Bullard online with Ledge Legal. We also had Eddie Grasser with the Alaska Fish and Game online with us as well to answer any questions. And Chair Ledoux, if you'd like to go ahead with your presentation and state who you are and go through your bill.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Gabrielle Ledoux. I am the representative from House District 15, and with me here is Christy Blair, my aide who has been working extensively on this bill. I'm just going to give a couple of introductory remarks, and then I'm going to let Christy basically explain the bill. But basically, what House Bill 129 does is it enables people who have 50% or more disability to have free hunting and fishing licenses and free camping privileges at Alaska state parks. And the bill was inspired by a constituent who is a veteran and he is disabled, but he is not a disabled veteran within the context of our statutes allowing for free hunting and fishing license, et cetera, for disabled veterans because his disability did not arise out of his military service. So we looked into what other states have done, and it seemed like a really simple thing to do, like change in the statute 70% disability, which is what the statutes read now, to a 50% disability. Somehow or other, as many simple bills work, they never turn out quite as simple as it would seem like they should be. So I'm pretty sure we're going to end up with a CS on this bill. We probably are going to use the bill also as a vehicle for cleaning up some of the statute as it now reads, because people from the departments have pointed out that there might be some problems, and looking at the problems that have been pointed out, it doesn't look like it's just this bill causing problems. It looks like it might be the statute as it now reads. So I'm going to, I've told you basically what this bill is trying to do. I'm going to let Christy take it over from here on out. And again, we have Mr. Bullard from Legislative Legal who's going to try to explain any of the drafting issues. So thank you.
Any questions from committee members? Okay. Representative Thompson.
Thank you very much. I haven't had a chance to go back and look. Moving it from a 70% disability to 50% disability, I'm a little confused on what is that. I haven't had a chance to go back. The only one that I know of is the workers' comp has different items that create what percentage of disability you have. And I hope somebody can come up with some answers on what's a 50% disability compared to a 70% disability.
And actually, that's actually one of the problems. There isn't any definition right now of a 70% disability. So there really probably should be a definition of that, and then we can have a definition of all of the various disabilities. The way that the statute reads now for a 70% disability is you've got to get a doctor's certificate that your affidavit that you're 70% disabled, or some affidavit or certificate from a government agency that you're 70% disabled. So the way that my bill reads is it just changes that from 70% to 50%, but since there's no real definition at the moment of what 70% is, there's also no definition of what 50% is.
Follow up. Have you looked at, under workers' comp, an injured worker, permanently injured with a disability? There are standards set up under workers' comp as to what that disability is, and I'm not sure what it is. I haven't had a chance to go back and take a look. Have you taken a look at that? Because when somebody gets injured and it ends up being a permanent injury, workers' comp has got standards for, well, if you lost a hand, it's something like 30% disabilities, and, you know, there's different ones, and I haven't had a chance to go back and look at that. I was just wondering what, if you've had a chance to go back and dig into that somewhat to see if that standard would be something that would be used here.
I don't think we have.
Okay, real quick, I just want to point out that Representative Rauscher joined us about 1:14, and we have Representative Jackson joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
But that is something that we will go back and look at as we're going through and trying to come up with another CS for this bill.
One more follow-up?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is something that I've worked on for years. This is considered an indirect expenditure. It's funds that the state do not collect, and I've worked at trying to slow down how much we lose by not collecting full fees or giving tax breaks and things like that. So I'll be interested to see where this actually ends up. I don't see where that all the fiscal notes, three of them are indeterminate because they have no way of knowing what the heck this is going to cost us. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. I also want to point out that on page 2 of the bill, it looks like in statute we already have 50% in certain areas for a disabled veteran, but the main change going from 70% to 50% is on page 4, the first line. Mm-hmm. And that's in regards to person with physical disabilities. So it sounds like to me like this bill expands it to not just veterans with disabilities, but all people with disabilities.
That is correct.
Okay, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just wondering, you said this was inspired by a constituent who, did you say that constituent considered themselves 50% disabled, but
yes,
they weren't?
They had some sort of rating from probably workers' compensation, actually, okay. Because he was injured on the job. So it was a workers' compensation. But he was a veteran, and he was 50% disabled, but it didn't mm-hmm. apply to him because mm-hmm. his disability didn't occur in the military.
And so in the drafting of this, did they suggest, I'm just wondering, you know, sometimes we link something to like CPI or something like, so would there be a way to link it to, you know, workers' comp or something? I'm just trying to figure out, yeah, how are we going to sort of address that?
Let's get on the line and see okay. whether or not that can be done.
And I also want to remind committee members that we also have Eddie Grasser with Alaska Fish and Game, and we also have Tom Taub, I believe that's right, with Sportfish in the room as well. So if you feel like that you have the expertise in any of these questions, feel free. Thanks, Tom. So Mr. Bullard, did you hear the question?
Vice Chair Tuck, I'm sorry. This is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal, and I did not hear the question.
Representative Tarr.
Hi, Alpheus. This is Rep. Tarr. And I'm just wondering, Representative Thompson was kind of heading the same direction where my understanding of the ratings, if you will, for a disability are through workers' comp. And then when someone, you know, goes through that whole process, then the result is, you know, there's some percentage disability, and then that influences employment later and access to programs and things like that. So I'm just wondering if you considered in drafting this, linking this to workers' comp. And then if not, I'm just wondering, could there be circumstances where I guess someone, yeah, they could have been a veteran, they could be 50% disabled, but that may not have happened through work. It could have been from a car accident or something too. So it doesn't, and I'm not sure it would capture everyone, but I'm just wondering, like, if you had thoughts about how we would address that piece of this.
Representative Tarr and members of the committee, once again, this is Alpheus Fuller. There are other disability rating systems outside of workers' comp. The Veterans Administration has its own disability rating. This is an existing definition, and I think the most pertinent answer might be a question for the Department of Fish and Game, how they're interpreting these statutory requirements right now, because this is a matter of existing law.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Bullard, I have a question. So we do have that in existing law, but it looks like we have two different statutes that not refer, but actually have a definition. I'm looking at page 3 of the bill. Section 6, line 24, says Alaska Statute 1605-797C is amended by adding a new paragraph to read. So that's a new paragraph where we have it at 70%. But then we go down to line 30, which is a different statute, 1605-940-26, is amended to read, and then we amend that down to at least 50%. So it sounds like that there are times when one statute will apply underneath a certain section and different applies. So I guess maybe I should ask the bill sponsor. I don't know what... I'd have to look up what see what is being referred to 1605-797C, but it sounds like that we have some provisions in statute that a 70% person with a 70% disability has the ability to have services or have privileges, whereas the 50% doesn't.
So I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Alpheus, that 1605-79C is basically, we just kept in place the 70% disability for the proxy hunting. Is that what that does?
Representative Ledoux and members of the committee, Section 6 of the bill that adds a paragraph to 797 relates only to computer-assisted remote hunting prohibited, and so it keeps the existing rating of 70% for people to engage in computer-assisted remote hunting in the state. But the definition of person with physical disabilities for the other purposes of the chapter was changed to 50%.
And if you may, Mr. Bullock, can you explain what computer-assisted remote hunting is? Is that like with drones, or is that, what is that?
Vice Chairman, Tuck, the statute provides that computer-assisted remote hunting means the use of a computer or any other device, equipment, or software to remotely control the aiming and discharge of a firearm, bow and arrow, or any other weapon used to hunt any game bird, game animal, or fur-bearing animal while not in the physical presence of the animal. I don't know all the forms that that might take.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm just curious, trying to figure this all out. Why are we amending the military veterans statutes on disabilities for military and veterans to include this language instead of creating a new complete subsection for non-military and non-veterans with physical disabilities? Why are we going to military and veterans to make this instead of doing a new statute completely to cover just non-military and non-veterans?
Representative Thompson, are you asking about Section 3 of the bill?
And if I may, I think the reason why is Section 16 has to do with hunting and fishing of our statutes. Section 26 has to do with military and veterans affairs. So I think these are the exceptions underneath hunting and fishing that we have this laid out. I don't know if that helps.
I just got a little confused of why we're using the military and veterans affairs or military and veterans statutes instead of creating a complete standalone for non-military and non-veterans disability.
I'm confused through the chair. You mean you're asking why he chose to draft it in such a way?
Yeah, under military. Excuse me, through the chair through military and veterans affairs. This is talking about the biggest part of this bill is to take non-military, non-veteran disabled, and making a new statute basically out of this. It seems like I got a little confused as to why military and veterans. It has nothing to do with military and veterans.
I think because, I mean, what this is, Section 16, as I understand it, is the fish and game statute. So you kind of have to put it someplace. And, I mean, someplace in Section 16 is probably, okay, there's one for the persons with physical disabilities. There may even be something for somebody who is over the age of 60 or 65. And, I mean, I guess he could have done it another way, but I don't see how that changes the outcome of it.
Follow up, Representative Thompson? Nope. And maybe it's for enforcement, too, so enforcement can at least look at one spot and then see that the person has a special license based on this. Representative Jackson.
Thank you, through the chair. Just feeding off of what Rep. Thompson is saying, there is already benefits to veterans with 70% disability, right? So we already have the benefits in which this bill is asking.
Disability, and for certain others, it's 70%, and we're trying to get it down to 50%.
If I may, I think that's the reason why, and I pointed out earlier that on page 2, on section 3, it's a free license for certain disabled residents and disabled veterans for active members. So it's that little section there has both disabled and disabled veterans, where it used to be only disabled veterans. And now we're in that, underneath that statute, creating another, I think, subsection to include those with a 50% disability who are not veterans. And I think that's what's getting, going back to Steve Thompson's question, why combine the two when you might want to keep them both separate? So I see what the questioning is.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Kopp.
Yeah, so I think your observation is good, and I think to Representative Thompson's question, in reading 1605-300 series, this is all fish and game code definitions and violations, and I think it is confusing. It almost seems like DMVA statutes, but it's not. It's just that it frequently refers to what the exemptions are for DMV, but it is the fish and game code and definitions there. So according to what you just read, Mr. Chairman, that the disabled veterans currently, if they have a 50% disability, they get a free license. So what we would be doing here is just adding disabled people who are at least 50% in the same section that had previously just referred to veterans. And that's just a policy discussion we could have, and that's, I think, gets to Representative Thompson's point, where it could have just been its own bill on, or a new statute, rather than amending the one on veterans.
Okay. And through the chair, my intent is just to include 50% disabled people, and I don't really care whether it's through drafted in this way, or if the committee wants to send me back and ask legislative legal to put it in another totally separate section. I just want to, you know, get to where I want to go.
Okay, thank you. I see the point, because the title of that does say both disabled residents and disabled veterans, which will allow us to add section one as a person with physical disabilities, and then move everything down to what we had before down. So I kind of see where it might be a little bit clearer if we had a section for free licenses for certain disabled residents and a person with physical disabilities, and then another section of anyone in Alaska National Guard military reserves that have those other conditions. So, yeah, just, I guess it's just preference on how it's drafted.
And Representative Kopp. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also think one of the policy questions is it had applied to disabled veterans, and there's a definition for, to be a disabled veteran, you're a veteran disabled in the course of duty. And then there's a veteran who is disabled, like any other citizen would be disabled, but not related to duty. But the standard is the same for both,
yeah.
50% disability. I personally am all for taking care of folks with disabilities regardless of how they got it, but it may be that we wouldn't be confusing honoring the veterans by having their veterans disability in its own statute. And then it sounds like Representative Ledoux is good either approach, but it could be confusing in reading that through what the intent is. Was it to recognize disabled veterans in particular, which is kind of how it was drafted, and now we're kind of, I'm just trying to think, is there another group we could be putting in there for free licenses that would make it even a longer title down the road?
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
Yeah, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to know what standards we're going to go by for determining the percentage of disability, because I sat on workers' comp for 8 years, and every doctor's got a different description of what their patient and how badly handicapped they are. And we'd have an independent, somebody'd say, well, he's 75% or 80% disabled, and we'd ask for an independent medical evaluation, and another specialist would come back and say, no, they're only 20% disabled. Mm-hmm. What's going to be the standard? We got to come up with some way to standardize this, because I can see this being a problem.
As through the chair, Representative Thompson, as long as there are human beings around who practice medicine or law or anything else, there's going to be different conclusions. And I guess I want to point out that any problems that this bill has are not inherent to this bill. They already exist in the current statute. And, you know, you can do your best to standardize, but that problem that you, as long as we're not robots, it's going to continue to exist.
Mr. Bullard, I have a question. On page 2, lines 28 to 30, where we have someone who has served in Alaska Territorial Guard is eligible for a loan under AS 1856-101 and incurred a 50% or greater disability while serving Alaska Territorial Guard. If we just simply say that any Alaska resident with a physical disability of 50% or greater, is there any reason to have Clause 2 and Clause 3, lines 24 down to 30, in the bill?
Vice Chairman Tuck, members of the committee, once again, this is Alpheus over at Ledge Legal. If your intent is that all people who are experiencing currently a 50% disability may receive a free, you know, sport fishing or hunting license, and these forms of proof that are articulated under paragraphs 2 or 3 are acceptable proof, then there would be no need for all of these provisions.
Alpheus, I thought we were leaving specificity in there for the military service and the guard service, particularly the military service, because the certification for the military service comes from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs that has their own grading system for 50% disability. So I thought that was what the determination was for leaving a discrete section with respect to the veterans, as opposed to lumping everybody together.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, when there may be good reasons to leave these provisions in place. I took Representative Tuck's question as a hypothetical question, as to whether if you wanted just to ensure that all people, no matter how they arrived at that point, who currently have a 50% disability, you might want to widen the range of proof or proof satisfactory to the department that would be accepted. But before the bill was, before being broadened by your bill, it was necessary to have these standards of proof for what 50% constituted.
So if I may ask, Madam Chair, my understanding of the intent was you had someone that was a military veteran who did not receive their disability status from military service, but then eventually became disabled.
Yes, that was, it wasn't the intent just to cover that one person, but he got me to thinking about things. And then we looked at some other states and came up with this bill.
So is the intent to allow anyone with a 50% disability to also receive this benefit, or only those who are 50% disabled who happen to serve in the military at some time?
No, the intent was to include anyone who had any state resident who had a 50% disability.
And then additionally, to continue allowing any active member to be able to continue receiving the benefit, which is in section, starting in line 31 on page 2. So I almost think that 2 and 3 is not necessary, where we just say there's two conditions. The first condition is you're a person with physical disabilities as defined, and the second condition is you're an active member of those A through F services. Boom.
So I actually had kind of thought about that, and I didn't want to do anything that might be perceived as disrespectful to our military veterans. And I mean, that's not to say that if it's the will of the committee that that would be a simpler, easier way of doing things, that I'm dead set against it, but just that was sort of my thinking.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions?
Well, I still...
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Rauscher. Rauscher had his hand up. I apologize. I am so sorry. Representative Rauscher.
So getting back to your question previously about computer-assisted hunting, I just want to know, through the chair, if there is language which will sufficiently in the bill give a complete understanding of what that means. In other words, if a soldier or if a resident has a bionic arm and he's hunting, it's computer operated, and I'm wondering whether you have sufficiently separated those two in this bill to where the person can still use his bionic arm or eye or whatever to hunt with. And so that's basically my question. I don't know who can answer that question.
I'm going to try to take a stab at it through
okay.
the chair.
Representative.
Basically, this bill and the section in this bill that you're thinking about, which is Section 6, Section 6, C, AS 1605797, C3.
Right.
Basically, all that does is say that the statute is going to remain the way it was. So this bill is doing nothing to change that in any way, shape, or form. And that's only this this proxy hunting or... Can't remember what it what's it called again? Through the chair.
Assisted remote hunting.
Remote hunting. That is going to remain the same. This bill isn't touching that.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
And it's really interesting because I didn't even know until talking about this bill that was something that even existed.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And just a reminder, we do have Eddie Grasser, Alaska Fish and Game, that may have some expertise. Or knowledge on this.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, were you calling on me?
Let me ask a question, Mr. Grasser. So, on a computer-assisted remote hunting, I don't know if you heard Representative Rauscher's comments on, using a bionic eye or a bionic arm in doing your hunting. But can you give us a kind of what computer-assisted remote hunting is referring to?
Okay. Yes, I was actually part of the effort to get that passed. In the first part of it, we were outlawing the use of a computer sitting at home with a screenshot of what was going on in a particular area. Say you were living in Georgia and you wanted to hunt a wild boar in Texas. In Texas is where this originated. You could actually use your mouse to aim the rifle and shoot the boar, even though you were sitting at home in Georgia. So, to answer Representative Rauscher's question, you have to look at Section B, which would allow a person in the field to use a bionic arm.
Real quick, Mr. Grasser, if you don't mind putting your name and affiliation on the record, just real quick, and then continue. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. This is Eddie Grasser, Director of Wildlife Conservation for the State of Alaska.
Thank you.
Anyway, that concluded the comments. Section B of 1605-797 allows a person with physical disabilities using equipment or devices designed to assist with the disability while present in the field. And that's the key right there. You can't be sitting at home. You have to be actually in the field using the equipment.
Any further questions?
Through the chair, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, my pleasure. Any other questions on the bill?
Yeah.
Representative Thompson.
Not from Mr. Grasser, though.
Okay, go ahead.
I wouldn't mind talking to the Department of Natural Resources, Parks, and Outdoor Rec. We have somebody present in the room.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes. Mr. Sadler, would you like to join us real quick for a question? And please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. For the record, Mr. Chairman, Dan Sadler, legislative liaison for the Department of Natural Resources. On behalf of Ricky Geese, our director of Parks and Outdoor Recreation, apologize he couldn't be here. He's at a conference. His deputy is likewise occupied, and so you've got me.
Representative Thompson.
To the chair, thank you. I was trying to figure out your fiscal note, and according to this, the free camping permits cost the state about $265,300 at the present time. Is that correct? Plus about $500 a year to produce the free decals?
To the chair, Representative Thompson, that is correct, yes.
Is this going to increase the amount that's available or being used? I mean, this doesn't seem to change. Is it always been 50% and they get this free, or is it a 70% before, or where are we at on the disabled for camping permits?
Here, Representative Thompson, I believe that as long as the free camping permit has been available for disabled veterans, it has been at the 50% level. If I might add that part of the ease with which it's possible to calculate the percentage disability for veterans is that the Veterans Administration, upon discharge of a soldier, airman, sailor, marine, will give them a disability rating, which the VA is set up to do at a percentage. I don't know of an equivalent civilian metric for rating percentage of disabilities. And yes, it would, for the record, it would definitely reduce our revenue should we expand the universe of people to whom this free permit would be applied.
Representative Thompson.
Through the chair again, thanks, Mr. Chairman. So right now, this is just for the disabled veterans that it's costing us about $265,300 a year, and this would increase it to include all civilians, so it would really increase the number of free parkings. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, yes, again, it's not parking. It would be
free camping.
Yeah, camping. Just want to make sure to clarify. Yes, it would. And part of the challenge we have is that we did do some research, sir, to try and find out what the universe of disabled Alaskans might be. And as everything happens, it depends. I think the information we provided in the fiscal note says that the Centers for Disease Control estimated that, I think, about, 19.2% have of Alaskan adults, 18 and over, have some kind of disability, not a percentage, but whether it's mental or mobility or self-care or vision or hearing. But if you dial it down to more finely mobility, then it's 8.8%. So there's a difference between 86,000 people or 36,000 people to whom this might apply. So that's the reason for our indeterminate fiscal note.
So your basis on the $265,000 reduction in fees does not include, the current statute is 2,195 biennial passes. This could well more than double the amount of passes that you're issuing, I would think, maybe way more than that.
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, absolutely correct, yes. And I might add also for the record, I can hear my ASD in my head here, that the revenues that we receive through parking passes, the legislature has been diligent in encouraging the Department of Natural Resources to increase its DGF funding sources and not come looking for UGF. Parks and Outdoor Recreation has done a fine job of doing that by collecting more fees, by putting in more fee collection stations that are more efficient and effective. Were this to pass with a large number of people to whom it would apply, that would blow a big hole in our DGF, which we might want to come back to you later looking for UGF.
Last follow-up, another follow-up?
Through the chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Sadler, I can see where this could raise it from $265,000 reduced in state fees to well over $1 million. And then we're going to have to triple our fees for people to park and to camp. I mean, I'm a little bit confused on, I'd like to know some realities on where that would fit with the camping.
Okay, thank you very
thank
much,
you.
Mr. Thompson. Representative Ledoux.
Yes, so currently, if you're 70% disabled, you receive reduced or free passes, correct?
I believe that, Madam Chair, it is 50% for veterans.
But for
non-veterans?
I thought there was some percentage if you for non-veterans.
No, ma'am. To my knowledge, there is not. I can double-check that, but I'm looking at the statute quickly.
No, that gets added in that line 23 on page 2. And the 70% refers to those who have the computer assisted.
So there's nothing in the statutes right now to help people who are 70% or over?
Specifically for camping permits. If I might, part of the confusion, I think, is that there are we're speaking of discounted or free parking passes for camping passes. We are also speaking of discounted or free hunting and fishing licenses, and also for the veteran population and for the civilian population. So there are a lot of cross currents and a lot of connections, and it certainly is there's the possibility for confusion.
So hunting and fishing licenses, there is a free license for.
Madam Chair, I will punt on hunting and fishing. My expertise lies more in the camping than the hunting and fishing.
Yeah. Can I have a question?
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so maybe just for, since you're at the table, we can just focus on the camping piece of it for 1 second, and then we can do the other part. But I'm reading the fiscal note, and it says the free camping passes available under current law are biennial permits. And so we're doing them on a two-year basis, and I think for the free ones, but I think everyone else does it on an annual basis, I believe. And so I just, anyhow, I thought that was just an interesting thing. And then I just wonder, based on Representative Thompson's question, if there's something to consider or if it would be information you could provide to us if we considered something that wasn't, say, for example, you know, was a modification from what other Alaskans would pay. So it would create sort of a special circumstance for an Alaskan with disabilities, but maybe we would model in a different way to be like a longer term one that was a reduced rate or something like that, so it didn't bypass the revenue altogether. So I'm just sort of, as I'm listening to the conversation, I don't know, because it's hard to estimate who the universe is that this would apply to, then I don't know if we would have much of an ability to do that. But if you have any thoughts on that.
I appreciate that. Through the chair, Representative Tarr, I do appreciate that. We do want to make sure and provide an important camping experience for every Alaskan who wants to do so, and current law does that admirably, I think, and I appreciate the sponsor's desire to extend that to more Alaskans. We have our fiscal concerns about what it would cost, but I would say this in speaking with my my parks director. He said that if we do go down the road of expanding the access, the free access to camping for disabled Alaskans, it might be, think of the model of a handicapped parking spaces at your local grocery store, 5%, 10% are set aside. No one else can park there, even if the rest of the lot's full. We might consider, as this issue progresses, having some spaces at campgrounds that are specifically set aside for the disabled, whether Alaskan veterans or Alaskan civilians, and then have them make their reservations over the online reservation system to rationalize or to bring a little bit more systemic management of those spaces to make sure we don't, you know, forgo revenue or forgo camping opportunities. It's an area that's ripe for improvement, I think.
And if I could follow up. I think that could be a really important conversation. I don't know how far we'll get this year, and if we don't get through this, maybe that could be part of the discussion, you know, to think about it a little more systematically, because this is an issue I've been trying to work on, and we were looking at trying to get more cabins and more campsites last year, and I know they actually increased the fees at some of the more popular ones for the very purpose of trying to be more sustainable, and so, you know, you don't want to sort of take two steps forward only to take one step back, and want to kind of be able to see that more long term of making sure that all Alaskans do have that access, and certainly want to think about the special circumstances for Alaskans with disabilities that may, you know, may be more economically limited. And so we would want to make sure that that wasn't a reason that they wouldn't get to enjoy those facilities that we all get to. But yeah, just trying to think about the long term of that, you know, because I know, like you were saying, over the last several years when we've had them in Resources Committee, there's been this ongoing effort to sort of ratchet up on the DGF side of things. And I think it's almost to 50% now that the division is it close, like 40-something percent that they're self-funded through these fees. So
I know they get about $6 million through the chair, Representative Tarr, but I couldn't tell you exactly the percentage of it. Okay.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
So I may be confusing this now with the hunting and fishing licenses, but I know for hunting and fishing licenses that if you're 60 or 65 or older, there's no fee. So how about for camping permits?
Well, Madam Chairman, there is, I would observe that it's $15 on average to camp at one of these fantastic state campgrounds in the most beautiful state of the Union, which is a bargain any price. And and I also know that, although I can't speak authoritatively, I know that there are low-price fishing permits for the young. I can see Max having a under-five permit, and my colleague, former colleague, having the senior. So there are provisions for low-income. There could, if the legislature willed it, provide a lower-cost camping permit for anybody.
They do,
but it would cut into our DGF.
So it doesn't exist now.
My knowledge, no.
Okay.
No, we'll check that.
Because what I was kind of getting at, and maybe is that, and it's obviously not relevant to the camping, but it may be relevant to the hunting and fishing, is that when we talk about how many people are disabled, well, we're already giving hunting and fishing licenses to people 65 or may even be 60 and over. And those people probably comprise a large portion of the numbers who are disabled, so that you'd have to factor that into account when you're doing the fiscal notes on that. But it doesn't apply to the camping.
And if I may, Mr. Sadler, when we look at these CDC data, they're not really differentiating on a scale of any sort of 50% or 70%. You're just basically stating that 19.2% have some sort of disability, but not necessarily at the 50% level. And then I'm not sure if we get to 50% level of disability, how many people would actually, with their disability, still want to go out of the home and do any type of activity. So I think there's a kind of a narrower fresh threshold there that might be able to have less impact on the free passes that would be given away underneath that. So just an observation on that. Any other comments or questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I was just looking to, I was trying to remember the number just to kind of get it this, how many in the universe, and I was thinking you may remember for different reasons, but don't we say there are 70,000-ish Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries? Does that sound right? I was just trying to remember the number. It's bigger than I actually would have thought. And so just when we think about disabilities, I was just looking at their page again, and mental illness, developmental disabilities, chronic drug or alcohol addiction, Alzheimer's disease, and related dementia and TBIs, the traumatic brain injuries. So the definition of who will help us understand who might be eligible. Because I think you're right about the age, but just having worked on a lot of the mental health issues and worked with students with special needs in the schools with disabilities, there are quite a number of, you know, younger people, younger adults. ARC of Anchorage is in my district and have worked with them a lot on supportive housing. And so they would probably fit for the residents with disabilities, but would be in that younger category and maybe more active. And, you know, I go to a lot of special O events. They're very athletic and outdoorsy and talented. So seems to me there'd be a lot of those folks that may want to enjoy these outdoor opportunities with their families.
If I could, Madam Chair?
Representative Mr. Chair.
That's true, yes. Having done the ABLE legislation a couple years ago, I understand that the big crux of the issue is what people consider disabled or a disability. We try and focus on the ability, not the disability, but this bill would establish a firm 50% standard, and it's not exactly clear how that would be accomplished. And that's a big chunk of work to pull off. I know that the Supplemental Security Income, SSI, you get if you're disabled. We're trying to brainstorm and think which civilian rating agencies might apply. I hadn't even thought of workers' comp, but I know SSI will rate you as disabled. Again, as the model of the handicapped parking pass, that's not a specific standard. There's no percentage rating, but those are important issues. And what was the other point I was going to make about that is that I lost it. Sorry.
And just point out currently that we have reported by a physician or a government agency. And so it depends on what government agency, I guess any government agency, whether it's Social Security or Workman's Comp, if somebody can prove a document of their disability. And then from there, if it's not a government agency, they just get one from their doctor. I guess that's the way it's written now. You want to respond real quick before I go to Representative Thompson and Representative Jackson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, actually, that was what I was trying to remember, is the other qualification is to get a doctor's affidavit saying the person is X percent disabled. I don't know what objective standards the physicians might have, and an interesting question to try and get answered would be how many such affidavits are issued to Alaskans for any purpose, whether it's for handicapped parking or for other purposes, for the fishing licenses, for example, and whether physicians would be willing to start doing that, because you know, a lot of doctors have friends, and if it's a matter of getting free camping any time for 2 years, you might try and prevail upon your friend, the doctor, to write you a little thing there. So who knows?
Are you saying doctors are unscrupulous?
Absolutely not. I'm just saying they're friendly to their friends.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Out of curiosity, is there a difference in rates that are charged in campgrounds for a tent camper compared to a motorhome camp?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, that's a darn good question. I wish I knew the answer. I don't. I do know that they charge $100 per annual passes if there's a boat launch, and I think the $15 per night is an average. Some places are 20, some places are 10. Having seldom had the privilege of camping with an RV, I don't know, but I can get that question. That's a good, fair question.
And I was just to follow up, just a little bit curious if somebody happens to pull in with their $400,000 motorhome, but by golly, you know, they get free camping.
Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the bill specifically say fee charged to physically disabled state residents. So what Representative Tarr was speaking of brings a whole nother community in when the bill is specifically speaking of physically disabled. So I think we should stick with the bill and what the bill is speaking of, because like you're saying, if we go there, you know, it is just taking everything, especially the fiscal notes, out of proportion. So, you know,
Sticking with the physically would probably be more fiscally.
Yes.
Thank you. A real quick question, Mr. Sadler. The fiscal note, can it also be projected a little bit more accurately if we look at the number of veterans that we have in here in the state of Alaska versus those with a 50% disability, and then be able to project that on the general population? Since we're opening it up to 50%, you know, just using the same factor, if you will?
Through the chair, or Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure who's chair, but the chair, Representative Tuck, that's correct, and we actually thought about that, because the proportion of the universe of all veterans to the smaller number of disabled veterans, could you apply that same proportion to the entire population of adult Alaskans to disabled Alaskans? And one could try that, but you might be skewed by the fact that I will say that veterans tend to be in better shape sometimes, might be more outdoors oriented. There's enough independent variables that it might not be a real defensible. It'd be a rough, but I think the more you get more precision by defining the degree of physical disability before you would actually need to rely on that proportional. But that's a good methodological gambit.
Well, the concerns of having losing income, losing revenue, if in your scenario of veterans being sometimes more active than with the disabilities and someone civilian being active, I think that actually will help us out in saying that this could be more of a conservative approach versus the expectation that more civilians would be active with their disabilities than veterans. So I thought I heard you saying that one of the problems is that veterans may prove to be more active with their disabilities.
Right. And therefore, through the chair, Representative Tuck, the implication of that is that there will be a smaller proportion of civilian disabled who might take advantage of the free camping permit than of the disabled veteran population. In other words, veterans would do it more because they're more active, more outdoorsy, mm-hmm. versus the others who might not be.
Okay. Yep, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Any other further questions, Representative Ledoux?
So could you prepare a fiscal note or an analysis based upon that? Apparently you thought about doing it. Could you come up with something which would let us know how many veterans are there in the state of Alaska versus how many of them have disabled free camping permits?
Yes, ma'am, we could do that. As I say, because we don't really know what the standard is, it would have such a large swing. Right now the number we have, it could be from 38,000 Alaskans to 83,000 Alaskans who are disabled, however you want to define disabled.
But the disabled is clearly in the bill physically disabled.
Madam Chairman, we can give that a try.
And there must be some statistics somewhere that would tell us how many people are physically disabled.
But not what percentage. That's the crux of it.
Changes every day.
Any further questions or comments? Okay, well, that's the last item on our agenda. I want to thank our experts for being here and being available to take any questions that we may have. Our next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, May 7, 2019 at 1 p.m. It is now, yes, Representative Tarr.
Pardon me. So with this bill, we're setting it aside. What's the next step for? I just want to make sure, are there amendments, or are we going to have a little more information?
We're not going to set an amendment time.
Okay.
I think I may try to deal with a CS here, because there's another problem with the bill which actually didn't come out, and we need some sort of an amendment, or it modifies in some way all of the proxy statutes.
And Mr. Chairman and yes. Representative Ledoux, if we have the bill in front of us at another meeting, I was wondering if we could have someone from the Mental Health Trust available to help with some of the questions about who's the universe of Alaskans that may have disabilities that aren't veterans and under 65.
And are not physical? Because...
Well, they're... I think there could be co-occurring disabilities. So, for example, like I think if someone has cerebral palsy, there could be physical as well as mental, and I think that they would be a beneficiary through because of the piece of it. So I think they would just be much more knowledgeable, and I could call them separately, but that's why I wondered if...
We can do that.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or discussion? Okay, so it is now... 2:05. This concludes our Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs Committee for the day. We are adjourned.